welcome to everybody to our weekly radio teleconference for January 31st, and welcome back. I know we've had a bit of a hiatus over the Christmas holidays, and we are back at it, and we'll be holding these regularly now. I'm going to just talk about a couple of things and then throw it open for questions. First, I haven't had a chance to talk with most of you about the President's State of the Union address, and so I thought I would give a couple of my observations about it. As is almost always the case, every president, when they give the State of the Union address, identifies a number of the key priorities and areas of focus that the country needs to pay attention to. And President Obama did do that with one very glaring exception, and that is he almost completely omitted reference to what I think is the biggest threat that our nation is facing, which is the incredible national debt and fiscal crisis that we are facing. And that was very discouraging to me. I did agree with a number of the other priorities that he identified, but I was very concerned about the fact that he proposed a significant amount of new spending, a significant amount of new taxing, and did not talk about how we are going to get a handle on our national debt. The bottom line is that our national debt now is over $15 trillion, and it has increased over 40% or around $5 trillion over the last 3.5 years. And we are starting to see the growth in our national debt literally jeopardize the American dream. And the response that America must have should be immediate and comprehensive. We need to have a very, very strong reduction of the spending pressures in Washington, and we need to reform our tax code in a way that will help us to generate very strong strengthening of the economy and an increase of revenue to the federal government from that growing economy. And if we don't pay attention to all of those pieces, then I'm afraid that we are going to see very, very critical economic consequences that we already are starting to see occur. And so that was my major concern with the president's speech, is that key issue was essentially left out of his remarks. Let me also just change subjects for a moment and talk about the conference committee that is now underway with regard to the payroll tax, unemployment insurance, and some Medicare reforms, among other things. As many of you may know, I've been appointed to be one of the senators on that conference committee, and Congress will be working on how to extend the payroll tax holiday so that most Americans would get about an $800 to $1,000 tax relief over the next year, and not only get that assistance in their own personal budgeting, but hopefully utilize that tax relief revenue in a way that will help strengthen the economy and build jobs. If we are going to reduce taxes, I think that we should do so, or excuse me, if we are going to incur costs at the federal level, and a tax cut would be a cost, I think we should do it in a way that helps individuals immediately right in their families rather than through other government spending programs. And I also think that's a stronger boost to the economy. Now, that being said, and I do support extending the payroll tax holiday, it is a cost to the federal treasury, and I believe that we need to offset that cost with spending reductions in other parts of the budget. And that's one of the issues that is going to be fought through in this conference committee, because there are those who think that we should not offset this payroll tax reduction. I believe that we should enact and continue the payroll tax holiday throughout the coming year. But I believe that the cost of doing that should be offset, both because it is revenue that should go to the Social Security Trust Fund, and taking it away from the Social Security Trust Fund will make that fund less solvent, and also because in just its fiscal responsibility, and at this point, I don't believe we should incur any additional great cost to the federal treasury without finding the offsets for them. So with that, let me stop, and we'll go to the questions. And I didn't get everybody's name who's I know is on the line, so I'll just start with my list and we'll work through it. And first on my list is Scott. Is Scott on?
Hi, Senator. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Great. Let's just follow up on the payroll tax cut extension. The Congressional Budget Office, I guess, released today a report that says those tax cuts would probably cost about $75 billion or add that much to the federal budget deficit.
Yes.
Where exactly would you raise revenues or cut spending to offset that cost?
Well, I personally have strongly advocated across-the-board cuts in the discretionary part of the budget. And I would actually agree with across-the-board reductions in the entire budget, including the entitlement sector of the budget. Unfortunately, from my perspective, a majority of the members of Congress at this point do not support across-the-board cuts. And so they're going to go in and start looking at specific items. There are some specific items that I am already aware of that might be workable. Actually, I know there will be a number that are workable. For example, on the revenue side, spectrum auctions that, if I remember the numbers right, could generate as much as $15 billion in additional revenue. On the spending side, there are a number of reforms in both the discretionary budget and in Medicare that many are proposing that I would be willing to consider.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Scott. And next, Mike. Mike Sharp, are you on? Or Jay? Was that Jay that was on?
Yes, Senator. It's Jay Howell.
Yes.
Good morning. We've talked before about how you are disappointed with the president's putting the kibosh on the Keystone XL pipeline. Since then, Representative Poe of Texas has come up with a plan where he would have the pipeline declared a national security interest, and therefore Congress could do a run around the president. Just wondering what your thoughts are on that, and would you support that if it came to the Senate?
Yes, I strongly do support that. As a matter of fact, yesterday in the Senate, Senators Hoeven and Lugar and Vitter introduced legislation, which I am co-sponsoring, that would effectively approve the Keystone XL pipeline project under congressional authority, claiming authority under the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution. And I actually don't know if this is identical to the approach being taken in the House of Representatives, but I support the notion that since the president and the administration have clearly indicated that they are not going to move forward and they have delayed this far beyond what is reasonable, I think Congress should take action to step forward and do it. You know, one of the key points here is that this pipeline is one of the largest infrastructure projects in our nation. It'll create 20,000 jobs almost immediately for the construction portion without any new government spending. And with a national unemployment rate at 8.6% and an increasing dependence of the United States on other countries for oil, even though a lot of this oil may be used to trade internationally, the fact is that the entire infrastructure and development of America's petroleum energy sector, including our delivery systems, is critical to the United States economy. And because of that, I would very strongly support legislation that would essentially make the necessary authorizations and allow us to move forward on the project.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And next, George, are you on?
I am, Senator. Good morning.
Good morning.
I want to go back to payroll tax relief.
Yes.
Let's say that there is no offset to make it budget neutral, or those offsets are so far out in the future that they really don't put a dent in the deficit. Would you still vote yes for this?
At this point, I would not be inclined to agree to do it with no offsets. It would be, as was indicated earlier, about a $75 billion increase in our national debt, which would represent an increased threat to Americans financially. And to put a burden on American families of that nature through our national debt in replacement of a short-term tax relief measure like that, I don't think would be good policy. Now, having said that, I also believe that we will not face that situation. I believe that one way or the other, we will get to a point where we find the necessary offsets and we are able to make this deficit neutral. In fact, the House legislation does that. And so there's already a plan on the table. That plan can be adjusted, and I would be very willing to work with colleagues of mine to find a more acceptable way to approach it if they want to. But I think the notion of just continuing the driving up of the deficit would be a huge mistake given the threat that our national debt poses right now.
But you would see those offsets have an impact on the budget sooner than later.
Oh, definitely. I think that they should be, and again, ideally, they should be short-term offsets. I'm not going to say that I won't agree to some offsets that are longer-term, but if we have longer-term offsets, for example, like the $2 trillion budget deal that was reached last year, most of the reductions there come in the out years, and I have consistently said that we need to establish a very powerful enforcement mechanism so that Congress doesn't do what it historically has a perfect record of doing, and that is to bypass the difficult spending reductions that it puts into its budgets. And I just say again, that kind of an enforcement mechanism that I'm talking about has already been put together by the Gang of Six that I worked on. We have a strong enforcement mechanism. And I will be continuing to advocate for that to be made a part of our law, regardless of whether it's in this conference or in future activities in Congress.
Thank you.
Thank you. And next, Leslie.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We need to do some catch-up here. There were a lot of bills introduced that we don't know what happened to, such as, is it Barrasso Hatch? That was the one about limiting the excessive litigation costs that the government pays for both the environmental extremists and the government?
Oh, yes, yes. I can tell you, I'm stretching back my memory here. I'm pretty sure I'm a sponsor of that legislation, but I definitely support it strongly. And it has been introduced, it's been referred to a committee, and there has not been any action on it at the committee level in the Senate since it was introduced into the committee, which is not surprising because, as you know, with the committee being controlled by the Democratic leadership and the Democratic chairman who are not sympathetic to the legislation, I doubt that they are going to be willing to move it in the committee. And so what that will mean is that we will need to work to generate public support across the country and then try to find a procedural mechanism such as bringing an amendment to another bill on the floor with that legislation included or some other effort to try to bring it to the floor without going through the committee.
And one other question, your comments on the EPA versus Sackett's case.
Yes. I'm very, very hopeful that the Supreme Court is going to rule in favor of the Sacketts. The position that the EPA has taken, which is namely that it can basically require citizens like the Sacketts to comply with its orders before they have an opportunity to challenge the legality of those orders in court or their directives, I believe is a violation of due process. And I don't know that that's necessarily the legal angle that will be taken in court, but my hope is that the Supreme Court will clarify that Americans have the right to have a legal determination about whether what is being done to them is legally justified before they are forced into compliance.
And is it June that they'll be making?
That's what we expect or hope. I mean, no one can exactly predict when the court will issue its ruling, but that's what's expected.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. And Jeff Mannix, are you on? And Jason, did I hear you?
Yes, good morning.
Go ahead.
Back to your conference committee, I saw there were some other issues that were covered as well. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the unemployment insurance and some of the authorization that's set to expire.
Yes. The other issues in the conference, in addition to the payroll tax extension, are, well, you know what? Let me back up very quickly and just explain the scope of the conference issues that we are having, because to a certain extent, it's not clear exactly what the scope of this conference is, because we are in an unusual situation where there is only one bill being conferenced. The general way in which a bill gets into conference is the House passes one bill and the Senate passes a different bill, but they are similar, and so they go into conference and they work out the differences. In this case, you'll recall that the compromise that was reached was the Senate bill was just a two-month extension of some of these items, and not all of the items, and the House was a broader bill, and the compromise was that we would conference the House bill. So there are some who say that since there is no Senate bill in conference, that the scope of the conference is whatever the senators want to say it is. The House members, and many of us, myself included, say that, no, we need a scope on this conference, and we're going to try to keep as close to the scope of the House bill as possible. So I know you didn't necessarily want all that long explanation before I got into it, but I did want to make it clear that to a certain extent, there may be additional issues brought into this conference that were not specifically in the House bill, but I don't think that it will go much beyond that. The specific issues you talked about were, or that I think you were referencing, were two major additional issues. One was the extension of a congressional fix, which has become called the Doctor Fix. It's a reform of the Medicare law in which doctors' fees, which they would be paid under Medicare, have been ratcheted down for year after year after year for a number of years. But Congress always stops that from happening because it is causing a lack of access for senior citizens to medical care. The many, many doctors are simply, the compensation rate is below their costs, and so the doctors are simply not taking new Medicare patients. And so in order to address that, Congress has, every year so far, has foregone that reduction in physician compensation, and this bill will do that again, and I think that is appropriate. If it didn't happen, then I think their pay would go down under Medicare another 20 or 25%, and we would just see a phenomenal loss of access of senior citizens to medical care. And so that fix is being proposed, and I think it will be broadly supported. And then secondly, the unemployment insurance, which you mentioned. And I believe that unemployment, there is broad support on both sides of the aisle to extend the unemployment insurance again. However, there is pressure, which I support, by the House members to put together some reforms of the unemployment system. And I can't talk with you in detail right now about the substance of those reforms, but I believe that they are the reforms that the House members are coming forward with. Relate to trying to make it assured that those who are obtaining unemployment are truly out of work and are truly seeking work, and also to try to incentivize the improved training of those who are out of work so that they have an increased opportunity to obtain employment.
All right. Thank you.
All right, that's the last one on my list. Anybody else on that I haven't called on? All right, I appreciate everybody being on this week and look forward to our calls for the rest of the year.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Okay, thank you.